on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors. This is InvestTalk, and today is Friday. We made it to the weekend. It is May 31st, 2024, and I'm your host, Luke Guerrero. And not only is it Friday, it is the last trading day in the month of May. Now, I don't know what next month will bring, but I do know that here at InvestTalk, our mission next month, the month after that, and every single day is to help make you a better and more informed investor. Now, to accomplish this, we bring you a mix of educational and actionable material to go over 5 days a week. And of course, most importantly, you drive the conversation with your finance and investment questions. Now, with that being said, we'll talk a little bit about today's market performance and this month's market performance and run down the show topics we have for you today. But right after we tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, I'm calling about an interesting stock. It's Taseko Mines Limited, TGB. It's actually kind of a penny stock, only trading at $3 a share. Market cap is only $800 million. It is in the copper space. It's doing pretty well. The numbers don't look that bad. I was wondering if you could take a look for me and let me know what you think and if it's too risky to invest in. Thank you. Bye.
So ticker TGB, which is Taseko Mines Limited, is exactly what the caller said. It is a copper play. It's about as pure a copper play as you can get. 97.6% of their revenue is derived from copper. So what are the downsides to only having a singular commodity as your revenue stream? Well, you're going to have a lot of volatility. So if you look at their revenue over the past 5 years, it's kind of all over the place as you'd expect as it would move with the price of copper. Now, the downside of that is if you take a look at their net margin in 2022, it's negative. And having negative net margin for 1 year is not always that big of a problem, but it is a big problem if you have a lot of financial leverage. So taking a look at this company, it's got about $480 million of debt on an $819 million market cap company. And it's pretty highly levered because mining copper is a pretty expensive business. Not only is it an expensive business, but it takes a while for copper mines to come online. And so in 2022, as I mentioned, they had negative earnings. In 2023, they eked out 21 cents per share, supposed to be 16 cents per share this year and 22 cents per share the following year. In terms of the relative valuation, their price to book is sitting at a 2.4, which is actually kind of expensive for a mining company. You typically see it closer to the 1.5 range. The industry average is actually right about their book value, which is 1. And this company's 5-year average is actually closer to about 1.5, which is what I would expect. So, you know, I do like copper as a commodity. We like copper over here at InvestTalk. And the reason being is because although it has historically been a harbinger for what is coming in economic activity, it's more than that now. It's more than Dr. Copper, as it has been for decades. It is now also tied to the renewable revolution. It's a metal that is necessary for a lot of products for renewable technologies. And because of that, over the next decade, the demand for copper is only going to go up. Now, that being said, there are some risks, and you did ask about risks. And this company certainly is risky because of its high operating leverage, because of how small it is, and because it's solely tied to one product. So, is it a good company? Fundamentally, it looks fine. It's got a bit of debt. It's a little levered, but its cash flow is improving. Its profitability looks solid. For me, if I wanted to get invested in a pure copper play, why not just get the commodities index that does copper? I think one of the benefits of investing in a more diversified mining company, which is what I would do, is that it more smooths the volatility around earnings, more smooths the volatility around revenue. You don't want to be just tied to one singular product because then you have a situation where some years you're negative, some years you're positive, some years you can't pay your debt. So I would pass on this one. It's a small company. It's too specialized for me. But if you're willing to take on the risk and you are certain about copper's future and you're fine with the volatility, then this company would work for you. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's some of what I have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this story, tips for dealing with market volatility. The road to financial success is paved with lots of twists and turns, but understanding market pricing is an important enhancement to the investment experience. We'll dig into that topic where we'll talk about market volatility and financial fitness investing and give you several tips on how you can better guide your portfolio through market turbulence. We're also going to touch on how if you own a 401k and if you own funds, historically, the manager of those funds has been responsible for proxy voting on important company initiatives. But given the advancements in technology, it's been easier to discover individual shareholders' beneficial ownership. And so going forward, some big fund companies are actually passing that back to those shareholders. So we'll talk a little bit about what that means for corporate governance and what that means for you exercising your rights as a shareholder. We'll also touch on some advice from the gambling realm. A poker player recently did a symposium with a European bank and had some tips about how you can use some lessons that they learned from poker in investing. So this primarily focuses on the tendency for investors to sell their losers too late and their winners too early. So we'll dig into that, see if there's any advice that can be applicable to our daily lives. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about how art in a higher interest rate environment is being used more and more as collateral for loans. That only if we have time at the end of the show. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on tech, that's TECH, which is Biotechnicorp, and MSM, which is MSC Industrial Direct Company. Also some questions that have come in from comics section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And since it's Friday, I expect to be able to fit in brief highlights of the KPP Premium newsletter. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show on 888-99-CHART. Now we're headed into a short break, and after we come back, we'll talk about the market today and this month. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, this is InvestTalk, and my phone lines are open now.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk, with more than 58 million downloads. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
So let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks were mostly higher after really a whipsaw of trading. Started the day open on the heels of the PC inflation data, then down for most of the day before rocketing to finish the month positive. The Dow up 151 basis points, that's 1.5%. S&P 500 up 80 basis points. The NASDAQ pretty much flat, and small caps up 66 basis points. Regardless, the S&P and NASDAQ still snapped their five-week winning streaks. Outperformers included apparel companies, retailers, dollar stores, managed care airlines, big tech broadly lower, as well as semis and software companies. Gold finished down about 90 basis points, almost 1%. Bitcoin was off 1.5% from the day before. West Texas Intermediate crude settled down at 1.2%, which means it closed down 1% for the week. All in all, I saw no real catalysts to the big late afternoon rally, though it did come just ahead of month end, which makes sense. Some fund managers like to invest at month end before reporting. Upside initially driven by really the support, like I said, from today's largely in line April PCE data that offered further evidence of an intact deflationary trend. Regardless, Headwinds from these select tech earnings, think Salesforce, and the recent renewed rate backup, and really hotter inflation numbers coming out of Europe and manufacturing numbers coming out of China, honestly, helped to quell any rally for the week. April core and headline PCE price indices decelerated slightly month over month as expected. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week, most likely. Core was up 2.8% year over year, which is largely unchanged from March, and also its lowest since March of 2021. Personal spending growth also eased after a strong March, while income growth was in line. Chicago PMI also missed with its lowest levels since May of 2020. Now, summing up the week in terms of what was good for the bears, there was renewed upward pressure on rates early in the week with the curve bear steepening. I think I mentioned that a little bit earlier in the week. And the hawkish Fed speak as a result of it. The AI theme also saw some scrutiny with software names noting budgetary prioritization pressures and some constraints. Also, the U.S. delayed sales of AI-related chips to the Middle East amid national security concerns. And as I've already mentioned, some hotter readings from Europe and Australia with regards to inflation. Now, on the bullish side, core PCE inflation did come in line with expectations for April, while core PCE for Q1 was also revised down in the GDP update that we received on Thursday. There's also more signs of disinflation's traction at the corporate level, consumer-facing names dialing back on their heightened pricing strategy over the past year. And retail earnings, honestly, could have been worse. A little leaner, but still better than some expected. One other sign on the corporate level, there's been some resurgence in M&A activity, which is always a good sign for economic output. Looking forward to next week, we got some manufacturing data on Monday, jobs JOLTS openings on Tuesday, and more jobs data on Friday. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends and your family members that the InvestTalk audio podcast is now available in video on our YouTube channel. And it seems that every day now we receive finance and investment questions from the comments section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel. And here's one that came in recently. It's on Enerplus and Chord Energy. It says, "Hi, I have a question regarding Enerplus and Chord Energy. These companies are in a sort of merger, it seems, and I wonder if I have to do something as a shareholder. I own shares in Enerplus, the U.S. listed, and today I couldn't buy or sell it. I read somewhere that Enerplus shares you have will convert into Chord Energy shares along with some cash. Is this true? And if it is, while this happens, will this happen automatically, or do I have to do something myself?" So this is a good opportunity to give a little refresher on merger activity. So when a company proposes to buy another company for shares or for cash, or in this case, a little bit of both, typically the only thing a shareholder has to do if they wish to have shares of the new company or get the cash is either A, nothing, or B, vote when the proposition comes to the shareholder vote. And so we talked about how oftentimes when you hold something in a fund, you don't vote. The fund manager votes. And if you're the beneficial owner, you do have the right to vote. Now, in this specific case, it looks like 6 days ago, the board and the shareholders approved this. So after that being said, no, there is nothing for you to do. The Enerplus shares will delist. It will become Chord Energy. You will receive your shares and your cash all automatically. There's nothing you got to do yourself. Thanks for watching. And keep in mind that if you are interested in getting your question answered promptly, feel free to go over to our InvestTalk YouTube channel. It's InvestTalk with two T's, and leave a comment for us. Let's grab another caller question now. This one came in earlier to our voice bank.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Hello to Steve. Hope you're doing well at home. This is Kevin calling from Southern California. I have a question about MSM. I've held it for a while. It was much higher, and it's been kind of tumbling down lately, close to my original cost basis average. I think it's a good company, and I'm wondering what you see that's driving the price down, and wondering if you think it's a good buy at these current levels. Looking forward to hearing your insights. Thank you.
So the question is about MSM. MSM is MSC Industrials Direct Corporation. And MSM is a company that engages in the distribution of metalworking, maintenance, repair, operations, product services. It makes cutting tools, heavy and light manufacturing, and has some government contracts, as well as providing some electrical supplies. And so after its first quarter earnings, it looked like it's likely that it misses its full year sales expectations due to that weak start in the year. And so for a lot of industrial companies, the recovery has been somewhat slower. And so a lot of the industrial names have been dragged down as a result of it. Now, this name overall is a pretty solid name. You look at their sales growth for an industrial company, 5% year over year, not too bad. Their net margin has been improving, or rather been steady over the past 5 years, up to 8.6% last year, projected to be 7.9% next year. Their cash flow, improving. Profitability, like I said, improving, very minimal debt. I think this is more of a cyclical issue. Its relative price right now, it's chilling at about 13.8 in terms of its forward-looking price to earnings. And overall, I think it's a good company. It's just caught in a cyclical sector-wide issue. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a short break, so hang on. We have lots more to come. My phone lines are open at 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this story, and that is tips for dealing with market volatility. The road to financial success is paved with lots of twists and turns, but understanding market pricing is an important enhancement to the investment experience. So let's dig in a little bit to market volatility and the financial fitness of investing. Now, as you all know, and I've mentioned, there can be challenges and twists and turns. The path to financial success is fraught with these challenges, particularly, and in no part two, frankly, the erratic behavior of investors during periods of market volatility. In fact, studies such as the SPIVA series by S&P Global have consistently shown that active fund managers tend to underperform their respective indices over both short and long timeframes. And why is that? Well, that's primarily because people tend to trade too frequently and get spooked when things become more volatile. Investors often react poorly to these market fluctuations, which means they sell off investments in inopportune times and therefore exacerbate their losses. And so in light of these findings, I think it's important to dig into three evidence-based strategies, three tips that are aimed at enhancing the investment experience for both novice and veteran investors. And so the first one is embracing market pricing. Instead of attempting to predict and outmaneuver market movements, investors should appreciate the efficiency of free markets, because it's a real-time consensus of pricing agreed upon by millions of buyers and sellers. And so recognizing and respecting the power of market pricing can help investors focus on long-term trends rather than reacting impulsively to short-term fluctuations. You should also try and avoid market timing. Justin says it all the time. Timing the market isn't as good as time in the market. And so trying to predict these market movements is generally futile and can significantly harm investment returns. For instance, missing just a few of the market's best days can drastically reduce overall returns. For example, an investor who stayed invested in the S&P 500 index over a 20-year period saw substantial growth, whereas missing the top 40 days, just 40 days of 20 years, could have turned your potential profits into losses. Now, on the contrary, missing the worst days could have significantly enhanced your returns, but predicting which days are which is incredibly difficult, if not impossible. And lastly, let's let the market work for you. Patience, and a long-term view can significantly benefit investors. Historical data has shown time and time again that equity markets provide substantial growth opportunities, and the longer you're invested, the longer your time horizon, not necessarily the higher your return will be, but the higher probability that you have higher returns. Now, aside from these, it's also always important to reassess your portfolio and make sure that it's not only in line with your investment goals, but just as importantly, make sure that it is in line with your risk profile. You shouldn't be investing in things that don't fit your risk profile. Overall, successful investing requires a disciplined approach and the understanding of market behavior rather than attempting to time markets or react to its short-term volatility. And so just thinking of these things when you're investing, just thinking of these things as core principles of investing can improve the chances of achieving stable, long-term financial growth and achieving your financial goals. Now, today's Friday. As I mentioned, I love Fridays. And on Fridays, we generally make some time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list now. The two-year treasury yield was at 4.879%. For perspective, last week it was at 4.95. 29 weeks back, it was at 5.05. And 127 weeks ago, more than 2 years ago, it was at 0.64. The 10-year yield was at 4.495%. Last week, that number was 4.69%. 29 weeks back, it was 4.63. And 124 weeks ago, that was 1.762%. Gold was priced at $2,327 per ounce today. Last week, that number was $2,333. 18 weeks ago, it was 2018. And 99 weeks back, it was 1809. Silver today was at $30.37. Last week, that number was $30.32. 16 weeks ago, it was $22.80. And 111 weeks ago, it was $23.94. Oil was selling at $77.08 a barrel today. 6 weeks back, that number was $83.10. 33 weeks ago, it was $87.14. And 124 weeks ago, that number was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.55 per gallon. Last week, it was $3.60 per gallon. 16 weeks back, it was $3.10. A year ago, it was $3.56, and 121 weeks ago, it was $3.57. In California, it was averaging $5.07 per gallon. 10 weeks back, that was $4.88. 31 weeks ago, it was $5.32. For comparison, in Hawaii today, gas was averaging $4.78 per gallon. That is 29 cents less per gallon than gas in California. Now, this is InvestTalk, and still to come, highlights from the KPP Premium Newsletter, as well as more finance and investment questions. If you'd like to hear yours answered right now, feel free to call anytime at 888-99-CHART.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The next InvestTalk Wealth webinar is coming up soon, Tuesday, June 11th. It's all happening online, and it's free. Join Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero as they explore the aspects of quality investing and why it's essential to look beyond high dividend yields. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. June 11th, 1 to 2 Pacific Time. Register now at InvestTalk.com.
This is Chris from Atlanta. I had a question about a stock called Tech. T-E-C-H, Biotechna Corporation. It looked interesting to me. I wanted to get your perspective on it. I'm not a big fan of biotechnology, but it seems like it's more of a picks and shovels play on that area. Look forward to hearing the answer. Thank you so much.
All right, so let's take a look at Tech, which is Biotechna Corp, and it engages in the development, manufacture, and sale of biotechnology reagents and instruments for the research and clinical diagnostics market. So what does that mean? Well, it operates in its protein sciences division and its diagnostics and genomics division, and in a way, it looks like it essentially makes products that help fuel drug discovery, testing, pharmaceuticals. So perfect characterization as a picks and shovels company. And if you've been listening to me talk over the months, over the year that I've been on this show, then you know that I hate biotechs. I hate them. but I'm going to give this one a fair shake. So let's take a look at the fundamentals. Well, in terms of debt, it's actually pretty modest, about $465 million in debt on $12 billion market cap. Cash flow looks pretty solid. It's improving. One thing biotechs do that I hate is they don't make money, and it looks like this one does. Makes a good amount of money. Anywhere between 13 and 30% in terms of his net margins, and that's kind of been all over the place a little bit. It peaked out in 2020 at 31%. Now it's down to about 25%, which is still very, very impressive. Again, not a lot of debt, very, very solid cash flow. And overall, I like it. I do. It pays a dividend, about 40 basis points, not a lot, but still pretty solid, something you don't find in a biotech company. And for me, the 50% annualized growth rate, it looks like in cell and gene therapy products revenue, is pretty good, especially considering that that's going to be a large part of medical research going forward, gene therapy. So I like the company. The only thing I don't like is it's very expensive right now. It's trading at about 38 times on price to earnings. Its price to book is more modest. It's about 6 times below its average. I would honestly, sometimes price to earnings isn't a great metric. I prefer price to book, to be honest, for relative valuation. I would wait until this thing comes down to about a 5 times price to book, but I do like this company. Very little debt, good operating margins. Thumbs up. Just keep it on your watch list for now. Thanks for the call. Now, the KPP Premium newsletter was finished today, and it will be distributed to subscribers tomorrow morning, but we have a preview for you today. In the market conditions section, we explained that this week's U.S. market had some jitters coming off of... Sorry about that. Had some jitters coming off of 5 weeks of gains for the S&P 500 because persistent inflation has been a significant thorn in the side of the Fed, which has recently indicated that interest rates may need to remain elevated longer than previously anticipated. This stance is underpinned by inflation rates that have not decreased as expected, which has led some Fed officials to consider the possibility of raising rates should inflationary pressures accelerate again. The upcoming week is laden with important economic data releases, which is expected to shed light on whether the U.S. economy is indeed slowing down sufficiently to allow for a shift in the Fed's interest rate strategy. Market participants will closely scrutinize the non-farm payrolls, ADP private payrolls, JOLTS job openings, and weekly jobless claims for signs of cooling in the labor market, which has remained relatively tight despite broader economic signals. Looking ahead, markets are bracing for potential volatility, with a keen focus on how the Fed interprets and reacts to incoming data. In the stock ideas section, we highlighted a company that is engaged in offering online dating services. The company operates 2 apps where users come every month to discover many people and connect. They have low debt and strong free cash flow, which gives them a great base to grow into the future. Investors should monitor key metrics such as user engagement and average revenues. We also looked at a wireless and wireline network equipment provider for small internet service providers and small and mid-sized business integrators. Its product is based on 2 primary categories. It has a strong business model with projections to grow earnings from $6.80 in 2023 to $8.72 by the end of 2025. Keep it on your watch list moving forward. We name names in the newsletter. Subscribe anytime at investtalk.com. Now let's shift gears and talk about an interesting development within markets, and that is pass-through voting, a concept gaining traction among major investment firms, could soon revolutionize how fund investors influence corporate governance. Traditionally, individual investors in these funds have not had direct say in corporate decisions. However, initiatives from the giants like BlackRock and Vanguard, and State Street Global Advisors are set to change this by enabling investors to vote directly during proxy season. So since 2022, BlackRock has introduced this idea of pass-through voting to some institutional clients and is now expanding it to around 3 million U.S. retail shareholders in its iShares Core S&P 500 ETF. This move allows investors who traditionally had no direct influence over corporate decisions to voice their opinions on critical issues ranging from executive compensation to environmental policies. The shift towards pass-through voting is really facilitated, as I mentioned at the top of the show, by advancements in technology. And so it's become easier and more feasible for them to identify who owns what shares, who has beneficial ownership over what stock. However, the push for pass-through voting isn't just about logistics. It's also emerging as a response to the changing political and economic landscape. For instance, the rise and subsequent backlash against ESG has prompted firms to reconsider how they handle politically charged issues. Now, this evolving situation is not without its complexities. For example, implementing pass-through voting on specific issues like Elon Musk's compensation at Tesla poses technological and even legal challenges. And the debate extends to whether fund holders should vote in line with corporate interests or exercise full independent judgment, which means for those who are less educated on the issues at hand, they could potentially be voting against their own interest. How does that interact with the fiduciary duty of fund managers? Now, the future of pass-through voting promises a more democratized form of shareholder engagement, where investors can tailor their voting choices to their ethical or political preferences. But as with most changes, there are likely to be unintended consequences. This could lead to corporate governance landscapes that more accurately reflect the diverse values of individual investors. But as we've seen with our political elections, this could also open the door to massive spending by companies to convince retail shareholders how to vote. Nevertheless, this is likely a good development given that one of the benefits of owning common stock in a company is being able to voice your shareholder rights and opinions on how the company is operating. Now let's fit another caller question now. This one came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. So I found this company, Powell Industries, ticker POWL. It checks some interesting boxes. First is in the electrical equipment space, which I like. Metric-wise, I see good return on assets, equity, investments, good free cash flow, low debt. Seems like a good company, but I also see double-digit short interest. Maybe its forward-looking guidance is less than stellar, but it continues to beat earnings. Looking to enter a position, wondering your thoughts. I'll be listening to your answer on the podcast.
Let's take a look at Powell. That's P-O-W-L, Powell Industries. Engages in the development, design, manufacture, and provision services of custom engineering products. They operate in four business segments, primarily their oil and gas, electric utility, and commercial segments, which combine total have about 75% of their revenue. The rest is in something called this other total. Can't really dig into that right now. And taking a look at its valuation, it's trading at a price to book of 6, which is well above its actual historical average over the past 5 years, which is 1.7, and at the upper end of its range, period. Now, its sales revenue over the past 5 years has grown at an average rate of about 10%. Most of that happened, it looks like, between 2022 and 2023, though it's set to grow pretty significantly from $699 million in revenue to $903 million this year. Its net margins, kind of all over the place. They didn't make money in 2019. The most they've had is 3.2% in terms of net margin, then back down to 0.1. Looks like before last year where they were at 7.8%, now to 12.4% is what they're projected to have this year. Cash flow improving, like I mentioned, profitability is improving, and the relative strength pretty high because over the past 52 weeks, it's been up 212%. But, and there oftentimes is a but, it issues a lot of shares. It's issued about 10% of its shares over the past 5 years, and its short interest stands at a whopping 20%. 20% short interest. That's pretty wild. And that's in spite of having some earning upgrades. I think for me, without being able to dig into this deeper, the likelihood of the reason why there's such short interest is because of the range of its relative valuation multiples. This tends to be at the higher end of it. And it's a smaller-ish company, about $2.5 billion in market cap, although it doesn't have any debt really at all, so to speak. Now, this is one of these scenarios where oftentimes, for me, short interest price discovery is, or rather, short interest and shorts out there is another form of price discovery. Now, it can lead to one of two things. It can lead to the price of a stock going down, or it can lead to a short squeeze. What you may have seen over the past couple months, where the price went up from 76 to where it is now, 179, may be due to that short gamma squeeze, but I would honestly have to dig into this deeper. It was down 12% today before I could give you the thumbs up. This looks way too volatile. Honestly, I would have to pass on this just primarily because there's a massive amount of short interest. There is, it's trading well above its valuation ranges, and its average broker rating is a hold. So I would have to pass on this, but thanks for the call. Now we have a live call from Mark in San Diego who has a question about MTZ. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
I have it. I got some profit, and I was thinking of selling it. I already have plenty of exposure to oil, gas, energy, through ETFs and stuff.
Sure. So let's take a look at MTZ. It engages in the provision of infrastructure construction services, primarily operating within energy. So it works in clean energy, oil, gas, and does the infrastructure, another picks and shovels company. It's mid-cap, $8 billion. It pays no dividend. Its revenue growth, pretty good, about 11% year over year over the past 5 years. Its margins, however, it looks like it lost money in 2023. It's set to have a net margin of 1.9% this year. It's up year-to-date 48%, and it's trading at a forward-looking PDE of 32. I agree with your intuition. If you are up a lot on this name, you already have a good amount of exposure to this sector. This is trading at about the top of its five-year range in terms of relative multiples. And yeah, I see no reason why not to trim this if you feel as though you have a good allocation sector-wise and you're up a lot on it. Thanks for the call. Let's go ahead and play another question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, can you look at Eagle Materials, ticker EXP? Got smacked in the mouth today, and I have no idea why. I own the stock. Still think it looks good, but I want to see if you guys have extra resources to see what's going to happen today. I'll listen on the show.
So let's take a look at why EXP was down. I don't know when this question came in, but it looks like... Sorry, when did that come in? Oh, that came in today. Well, I don't think it got smacked in the mouth. Looks like it's only down about 50 basis points today. So I would not characterize that as being smacked in the mouth. So let's take a look at this company from a non-smacked in the mouth perspective. EXP engages in the provision of heavy construction. It's a materials equipment company operating in cement, gypsum, concrete, but mostly in cement. About 50% of its revenue comes from its cement division. Their growth, pretty solid, though most of their five-year growth, it looks like, happened in from 2020 to 2022, though cyclically, what's going on with construction, you would probably expect that. And it looks like their net margins are pretty stellar, actually. In 2029, their net margin was 4.9%. Then that got up to 20% in March. And that's been consistently above 20% since March of 2021. 21.1% last year, projected to be a 22.1% next year. Looking at their debt levels, it's about a $1 billion worth of debt on an $8 billion market cap company, and it's not overly levered at all whatsoever. Its interest coverage ratio is 14 times. Its earnings have been upgraded. Its cash flow is improving. Its profitability is improving. They're buying back shares. There's not a lot of short interest. They pay a dividend of 40 basis points, and it looks like year-to-date they're up 14%. From a relative valuation perspective, price-to-book is 6. Price to earnings is 14. I see no issues with this company. Their cash flow is on the right track. Profitability is on the right track. From a high level perspective, I like everything I'm seeing fundamentally. Technically, it seems to be doing just fine. Interested, maybe one of these days, maybe after earnings, it got smacked in the mouth, but taking a look, it was down by about 50 basis points below what the consensus estimate was, but certainly it looks like it has since recovered a little bit. I would give this one a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Now, as we go to break, I want to remind you that we are preparing a new InvestTalk Wealth webinar hosted by myself and Justin. The official title is Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. At this free InvestTalk Wealth webinar, you'll gain valuable investment insight. You'll even be able to participate in an interactive Q&A session to obtain personalized advice. It happens online Tuesday, June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time, so go to investtalk.com now to register for our upcoming wealth webinar. Even though it's free to attend, just remember you have to pre-register. And now as we head into the break, our final break, my phone lines are open and waiting for you to call at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
you're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. Brent from Wisconsin here, first-time caller. I wanted to get your take on company ACOM, ticker symbol ACM. Alpha Charlie Monkey. I like that they're an engineering firm and they have a small piece of the forever chemical cleanup field, and both these industries interest me. So if I can get your take on this company, this would be for a long-term buy. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye.
So taking a look at ACOM, which is ticker ACM, it engages in the design, manufacture, financing, and operations of infrastructure assets for governments, businesses, organizations. Looks like 100% of its revenue comes from its planning and consulting business. And 71% of that comes from the United States, 13% from the Middle East. Turning to fundamentally their revenue growth over the past 5 years, it's kind of all over the place. $20 billion in revenue in 2018. And then that went down to $13 billion in 2020, though you would expect that given what was going on in the world, if you recall. And then in 2023, that went back up to $14. But for some reason, their forward-looking guidance this year suggests that their revenue is going to drop to $7.2. That's a precipitous drop. And so I did see recently, it looks like they secured a U.S. Army Environmental Command contract. So maybe that changes what their revenue is going to be. But That's a little shocking for me for their revenue growth to fall like that. The only thing that would possibly be the reason for that is maybe some massive contracts expired. But regardless, let's look at their profits. It looks like even with that fall off in revenue, their profits are projected to be 8.4% in terms of net margins, which is good. They've been profitable every year of the past 5 years, with the exception of 2019. And it has kind of waved between about 1% to 3%. So 8.4% is a significant growth. Certainly, return on equity is supposed to get to 27% this year. And so with that being said, it looks like over the past year, they're up 11%. Year to date, they're down 5%, perhaps due to forward-looking guidance on their revenue decline. It's an $11 billion market cap company. It doesn't have much debt, $2.8 billion. So that's good. It's cash flow. Looks like it's improving. It's been pretty steady, actually. It peaked out in 2021, though it is consistently above where its previous peak was in 2019. And so that's a good thing as well. Now, that being said, its valuation is a little high for me in terms of price to book for this type of company. It's trading at a 5.3 times. Its sector average is at 1.1. It's at the top end of its range as well. And this AI search that you can see at home that FactSet uses implies that the sentiment score with regards to customer topics, maybe a beginning about revenue, turned negative for the first time in 5 months. It's set to give its latest updated earnings in August, so it's been a while since earnings. None of this price movement is related to earnings, but regardless, it's up 1.72% this year. So for me, this company, given the sector it operates in, where its price to book is, its relative valuation right now, and the fact that its revenue growth has fallen off so precipitously, though it is a good sign that its margins are doing better, I would have to dig into this one a little bit more. I can't give you the thumbs up. I would give a maybe dig in, find out why that revenue is dropping off. It's, again, a good sign that their margins are improving. It means that their costs are down as well. But that is a pretty significant drop off, even though cash flow is looking better. Even though profitability is looking better, I think this one requires a little bit more digging into, certainly more than I can do within a couple minutes. But thanks for the call. Excited it was your first call, and feel free to call back anytime. Now, before we head off into the weekend, I want to touch briefly on some advice that came from the poker world in terms of investing. And so there was a conference, and this poker player, Annie Duke, pointed out that there are several psychological biases that complicate what they call quitting decisions in poker, folding hands, or in this case, selling. One is loss aversion, though the pain of loss outweighs the pleasure of a gain. Sure loss aversion, where people avoid confirming a loss, even at the risk of greater losses. And in the endowment effect, where when you have the money in hand, it means more to you. And so we can think about this in terms of buying and selling securities. And you have to note that people tend to hold on to their losses way longer because they don't want to realize that loss, and they sell from their gains too early because they don't want to let those profits ride. So when you're investing, just like when you're playing poker, think about those biases that are inherent, they're innate in your brain, and don't let those stop you from being a better and more informed investor. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Just a reminder, the next InvestTalk Wealth webinar is coming up fast. It's happening online on June 11th, so learn more and register now at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.